When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. You know, a new set of windows, a new door can do a lot of things for you. It can change the look, the vibe, the feeling of your home. It can add value to your home. Plus, it can make your home more energy efficient. Pella checks all those boxes and then some. Pella can turn your window and door remodeling dreams into a reality. So hit them up and give them a call. 402-493-1350 or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good pals at Runza. Runza and my podcast, we've teamed up. Got a pretty exciting summer sweepstakes that could win you one free Runza combo meal a month for an entire year. That's big time right there. All you got to do is head over to herdappmedia.com/BawSweeps. That's herdappmedia.com/BawSweeps to enter for your chance to win. You might get your free Runza game right once per month for an entire year. All you got to do is get registered for your chance to win. So head to herdappmedia.com/BawSweeps, get registered, and you might be the grand prize winner. Runza makes it all better. Okay, welcome back into the podcast, and we got a great one for you today. One of my favorite dudes and favorite Creighton Blue Jays of all time. Jahinz Managa is my guest on the pod today, former Blue Jay. He's the first ever Creighton Blue Jay from Canada. He had a really good four-year career at Creighton from 2010 to 2014. Was a great shooter, energy guy, 3-and-D stud for Creighton. And in his 4 years at Creighton, they went to 3 NCAA tournaments. He was Doug McDermott's running mate. He was his roommate. Jahinz is a stud. And he's had a really, really good pro career, too, doing a great job overseas in a variety of stops. And I wanted to get Jahinz on my podcast to not just catch up, talk hoops, talk Creighton hoops. But the more pressing thing is I wanted to get him on to discuss the fact that Creighton has a team that is playing in the tournament, and Jahinz is on it. And if you haven't watched the tournament, it's on ESPN. It's been going on for, gosh, like 5 or so years. It's every summer. It's a really cool concept. It's a single elimination field of 64 tournament where the winner gets $1 million and second place gets nothing. So, I mean, it's intense. It's high-level basketball. And the coolest thing is that it's become a thing where teams with alums form from certain colleges have teams. So Marquette's team won last year, a Marquette alumni team. Ohio State's alumni team, Aaron Kraft is leading their crew. Like, so it is a really, really fun tournament to watch because you got these alumni teams. Xavier's got an alumni group this year that's loaded with J.P. McKira, Trayvon Blewett, those guys. And so finally, Creighton has a team. And the tournament starts on July 16th for Creighton. The Blue Crew is the name of the team, the Creighton alumni team. You know, it's got guys like Chapman, Martin Crumple. There's also a few former state of Nebraska kids as well on the squad. But it's the Blue Crew, Creighton alumni team. And they tip off in Wichita against the Kansas State alumni team. That'll be the tip again. It's Friday, July 16th. It's at 3 p.m. Central Time. It's on ESPN3. So you're going to have to be able to stream it. I'm going to be watching. I'm pumped. Again, single elimination. Winner wins $1 million. It's fun to watch. So I wanted to get Jahinz on about playing in the tournament and then obviously talk some hoops with him as well as his career at Creighton, playing with Doug, his pro career, how he sees NIL and college sports and next year's Blue Jays squad, bunch of different stuff. This one's great. I mean, Jahinz, man of God, is an amazing guy. And it's, for me, that group, Doug McDermott, Ethan Rogge, Grant Gibbs, Austin Chapman, Jahinz Manninga, those guys, like, I was around them all the time as the radio analyst, right? I was on the road trips, on the planes with them, on the bus rides with them. Like, I helped out on scout teams at times during their run. I'd go play pickup, play summer league with them. And I got to know that crew really well. And I got to know Jahinz really well. And just an amazing guy. Arguably the most popular guy in the team. Infectious energy. Everybody loves Jahinz, man. I mean, just was one of those guys. It was great to watch him play at Creighton. It was great to get to know him off the court as well. And so you guys are really going to enjoy this. He is just, he's one of the best dudes on the planet, man. So let's get to it. Here is my podcast chat with former Blue Jay Jahinz Manninga. Enjoy. All right, online now, if you felt like the energy has just, like, risen by a dramatic amount, you would be perceptive because Jahinz Manninga is on the line, former Blue Jay. Jay, what's up, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm out here, man. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. So I went on your pod, Welcome to the Jay.
Hell yeah, you did.
It had a blast. So, like, I feel like you set the bar high. Like, it's like you threw a party at your crib. I came in. It was, like, amazing. Now I'm throwing a party at my house. I got to, like, make sure this party is on point. I'm glad that you remembered that I gave you the nickname the Canadian Red Bull. And I'm glad that you do miss hooping with me in the Metro Summer League. Like, those are the only two things I wanted out of the podcast. I got them both.
Well, I have to give you your flowers while you're still here because I've heard through a grapevine that some people have been trying to claim the Canadian Red Bull moniker, and I know it wasn't them. I know who it was. So I just have to make it clear on my podcast. Okay. I thought, you know, what better platform to do it than on my own first, and then now the world knows. At least the Blue Jay world knows. I don't know if the entire world knows, but the world knows. And, and you know, you got your due recognition for, you know, the work that you put in.
I put in a lot of work, you know. I just give me some love for that. Give me some credit for that. How was the first year of podcasting for you? Did you enjoy it? Like, how was it for you?
Man, it was so much fun. It was a strange, obviously, with the time difference. I was in Lithuania all year, so I was about 7 hours ahead of, Midwest time zone. Yeah. So that was a little difficult at times. I definitely lost sleep every once in a while just to make sure I could record a few episodes. But, man, it was just so much fun just to be able to catch up with some of those guys because usually we do a good job of staying in touch anyways. But the podcast kind of gave me a reason to just, you know, check in even more. So I obviously thoroughly enjoyed that. Those guys are still some very good friends of mine, the guys I've been on the podcast. So it was a neat experience, and I'm looking forward to more episodes, especially this upcoming year.
So there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about with you, but I think the most pressing thing is the fact that the Blue Jay alumni squad, we finally got a squad, man. Got a squad playing in the tournament, the TBT tournament that's been going on for a couple of years. People that don't know, it's on ESPN. It is a single elimination. Winner of the tournament wins $1 million. And if you come in second place, you get not a penny. Like that's the structure of this thing. And you guys are going to open up on Friday in Wichita, I believe against it's the K-State alumni squad. Is that correct?
That's right. Against Purple and Black, AKA K-State alum.
Okay. First of all, how much of the tournament have you previously watched before?
Man, for the last handful of years, I've been paying attention to what's been going on over there. And it's just such a neat concept, you know? It's something that I just kept wondering, why don't we have a team be a part of this as well? Especially last year when I started the Marquette Alum 1, I was like, I feel like we can compete. I feel like we have enough guys who are still playing pro who would be willing to come back. And, you know, obviously we're Blue Jays, so we know how to play the right way. We're very well schooled and, you know, playing as a team, playing together, playing unselfishly, and knocking down the three ball. So any team that plays that way will give themselves a chance to win. And I just felt like we have enough pros and guys who understand the game of basketball to be able to do that. So it's cool that the guys behind the scenes were able to just kind of get it all together and gave us a chance to represent once again. And that's what I'm most looking forward to, is another chance to put, I guess, not the Blue Jay jersey on, but something similar to that that's going to represent not only Penn University, but Omaha as well.
What has been take me behind the scenes here of the process of getting ready? Because, like, this isn't like, you know, you show up and like roll the ball out. Like you got to kind of have like your shit together a little bit. You know what I mean? You probably have to have some defensive concepts, a few set plays, like just general things that you're trying to do. Like what's that been like leading up to the game?
Well, the prize is $1 million, so you know those other teams are going to be ready. So we better have our act together if we want to give ourselves a chance to win. So we just started training camp this week. We're going to have a few practices headed up before Thursday when we go up to Wichita. And Josh Jones, the head coach, is a very familiar face for Crane fans and for myself, being obviously a former teammate of his. And right now we're just trying to establish, you know, our spacing, how we're going to play, how we're going to execute offensively. I think today we're going to add in a lot more defensive stuff with our assistant coaches who are going to be in practice as well. So it's kind of like a shortened version of, I guess, two-a-days, if you want to compare it to the college ball system, where coaches are literally just throwing everything at you. And then at the end of the week, you're just, your head is spinning and you're just trying to figure out how you got to where you got to. So, I mean, like I said, we're all pros, so we know exactly, you know, we all have concepts in our minds. It's just a matter of all of us being on the same page of how we're going to execute those concepts. And, you know, communication is going to be key. Unlike being overseas, everybody speaks English here, so it's going to shorten up a little bit how long it takes for us to be on the same page. So I think we'll be fine. I think, like I said, we know how to play, and we're intelligent basketball players. Once you get a decent amount of guys in the gym that know how to play and they know how to play the right way, I mean, you should be able to execute and you know, play well within that group. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Here's the thing, though. I was thinking about this. We know what Josh Jones' shot selection was like. Dude had the green light all the time. So, Jay, he cannot give you any shit. If you take a quick three or something like that, you got to look at him and give him that look like, are you serious right now? You can't tell me.
Hey. Look, I tell you what, Josh Jones, he's on it because, like, we made mistakes yesterday and we had to run because of it. And here's the thing is that obviously he was a former teammate of mine. So once he said, hey, get on the line, I looked at him kind of sideways and I was like, wait, hold on. But the man is my coach right now, though. So, like we've all been in those situations where we had different coaches and whatnot. And there's kind of a level of respect that just naturally comes once you put head coach in front of anybody's name.
Sure.
But he said it on the line. I looked at him sideways like, dude, are you serious? I know. I'm like, oh, no, that's head coach Josh Jones right now. And I just got my ass to the line and ran as fast as I was supposed to. So, like, if he says anything about my shot selection, I'm probably going to have kind of the same reaction. Look at him sideways a little bit and be like, hold on. That is head coach Josh Jones at the end of the day. For the time being, until we win or get eliminated, he's head coach Josh Jones. And I'll respect him as such.
He is, though. Josh and Marcus Foster probably. But Josh probably is the gold medal winner of, like, the – What the hell was that shot?
No. Yeah! Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Josh Jones, he should be, if such a term was written in a dictionary, his face would pop up with that smile of his, for sure.
Yeah, what's a just shaky shot selection? Like, Josh, see Josh Jones, you know? But that you know, you play with confidence at the green light. Mm-hmm. I love it. The cool thing about this, the tournament, and fans, basketball fans, have probably seen this a little bit if they've watched the tournament or watched the All-Star game the last handful of years, is the Elam ending. Obviously, for people that don't know, it is with the first dead ball with under 4 minutes to go in the game. The clock turns off, and whoever is in the lead, there's 8 points added to that score. And so the first team to reach that target number wins the game. So the game has to end on a made shot, which is really fun to watch. So what do you think of the Elam ending?
So I got to play in the Canadian Elite Basketball League last summer, the CEBL, and they implemented that too during the pandemic. It was just kind of a way to, you know, switch things up and make things maybe a little bit more exciting for the average viewer who doesn't know about the Elam ending. I thought it was terrific. Yeah. I mean, every game ends on a game winner. How much more exciting can basketball be than that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like as soon as the 4 minute mark hits, everybody's on the edge of their seat because all it takes is a couple of mistakes here and there and the game can really swing. From the CBL last year, I saw that some teams who were down seven really never gave up and just kept putting the pressure on. Before you know it, they hit a game winner and they steal a win, so to speak. Because in an average game, if you're up seven with 4 minutes left, not that that game is totally out of, spoken for, I
Yep.
should say, but it's just like the team who is leading has an extreme advantage. They could just sit on the ball, run
Right.
their sets, run the shot clock down with their intelligence, and get the best shot possible, right? And eliminating all of that is thrown out the window. You still have to score. Like, you absolutely have to score to win the game. So it's going to be exciting for sure. And people who are not very familiar with that concept, I suggest that you tune in and just kind of check it out. And it's just a totally different approach to ending a basketball game. But I mean, what is more exciting than a game-winning shot,
Right.
to win a game? And that's going to happen literally 64 times in the next 2.5 weeks that TBT is going on.
Yeah, it's I enjoy it. I really do. I mean, it makes it so you got to keep the foot on the gas. You can't just play not to lose and let the clock run out. Like, you got to keep on being aggressive, which is great. Like, when you think about you've carved out a nice pro career here. Like, where are you at with it now? Can you see the finish line? Do you still feel like you're as good as you've ever been? Like, are you on the back nine of your career? Like, where are you at with it, you think?
I definitely feel good. My body feels great, actually. I'm surprised that my body's held up as well as it has. Like, knocking on wood,
Yeah.
I've been blessed to not have too many serious injuries. In the 7 years pro that I've played, I've only missed about five games.
Nice.
So that's something I'm very thankful and blessed about. I'm definitely on the back nine, though. I really like what Dwayne Wade did with his career, where he felt his body sort of, start to shut down on him, and he decided to end it sooner rather than later, kind of go on his own terms,
Right.
I'm really feeling that kind of move for myself. Like, I've told a couple of people already, I feel like I got about two, 3 good years left, and then I'll kind of reassess the situation when we reach that point. But more so than ever in my career right now, I'm just taking it on a year-to-year basis. But like, if you were to ask me, hey, can you play maybe 5 years? I'll say, like, hey, that I feel like that's maybe a little bit too much. Let's start at three. Let's see how I feel, and then we'll reassess the situation once we get there.
Give me your best WTF overseas story, because like I hear from certain people, like, certain leagues and certain franchises and clubs that you're on, everything's great, right? You're treated great, everything's awesome. But then the opposite can be true. You'll hear horror stories about some different things overseas. What do you have any, like, what the hell is going on here story with playing pro overseas?
Man, I've heard so many horror stories. I'm lucky that none of them really happened to me. I guess the standard one would be when the pandemic hit. We literally went from like playing in front of fans on a Saturday afternoon to playing in front of no fans on a Wednesday to by Friday the season is done. And like, we're all looking around like, what is
Right.
going on? But I think that was kind of standard for literally everybody else around the world in their own respective jobs. So that's not really too much of like an outstanding story. But man, I gotta thank my agent. He's kind of put me in
Yeah,
some pretty
that's
good spots
great.
where I didn't have those kinds of experiences.
I think Gibbs, didn't Gibbs go to like Amsterdam and didn't have like a trainer and like, or so, like, so, I feel like Gibbs had a rough first year.
Gibbs, I mean, I would want him to speak on his experience for himself, but from the stuff that I've heard, yeah, he wasn't placed in the best spots, especially early on in his career. So, I mean, he's a head coach now. It works. It
Yeah,
all
that's
worked out
right.
for him.
It did.
But yeah, I don't know. There's some horror stories that you hear for sure. Like, I've
Yeah.
heard about people not getting paid for a while. I heard about people like, because of their poor play, the team decided to talk to their bank, and the bank froze their accounts
Oh
while they
my
were
God.
overseas. Like, I've heard a whole bunch of craziness like that, and I'm glad that I've never been a part of it.
What okay. You're a perfect guy to answer this question. Like, what advice or maybe just thoughts would you give players who are about to go overseas for the first time or are deciding between, okay, I could stay for my senior year of college, but I kind of want to go pro. I'm probably going to end up overseas. Like, what kind of jewels and advice would you drop for guys trying to size all that up and think about what it would be like going overseas?
Man, I would just say to keep an open mind. You're going to go to an unfamiliar territory where you don't speak the language and people have different customs and norms. Just keep an open mind about everything that you're around and just try to learn a different culture. Sometimes we're taught that like everything that we're taught growing up is the right thing to do. That's not necessarily true. Other people do things in a different way and it might be right for them and it might not be right for us, but that doesn't mean that it's wrong altogether. So just keep an open mind. I remember my first year I was in Romania and I just like the culture, like kind of, it was certainly a culture shock, like for sure, because I didn't know the language, like things were a little bit different around me. And I found myself kind of like shutting down a little bit, like especially in the first couple of months. And I just kind of realized like, hey, these are just average people just like you and me. They go to work every day, they try to provide for themselves and their families, and they have fun on the weekends whenever they have a chance to. Like they're literally just like you and me. So once I kind of realized that, it just allowed me to open back up a little bit more and enjoy myself a little bit more. And looking back on that first year experience, like it really taught me a lot about just being that far away from home and away from family and friends, how you can still enjoy yourself and even though you're in unfamiliar territory. So certainly keep an open mind and for the guys who are thinking about leaving senior or junior year, I think I'm gonna end up being overseas anyways. If you don't think you're an MBA guy, honestly, enjoy all of college. That's what I would say because I certainly enjoy my experience here, and I would hope that everybody has that same type of experience if they come to see you or not. So, yeah, certainly just while you're young, just enjoy the present, I guess, would be my best advice.
Did basketball, I never played professionally, so I'm curious, like, did basketball immediately feel different with the implementation of money and a salary where, you talk about how it, I mean, it becomes your job. Like, this is like how you are gonna, support yourself, like, versus how it was in college and in high school. Or did it always, like, did it just still feel like basketball?
So I'm gonna ask you a question rhetorically, I guess. What comes with money?
Problems,
Politics.
stress.
Politics is what it is.
Right.
So yeah, there's certainly like a little bit of a shift. Going back to that year in Romania, I started off the year playing pretty well. And then unbeknownst to me, another player's agent got wind of me taking that player's playing time and basically just started setting threats to the organization. Like, hey, I'm gonna pull my guy out if you don't give him more playing time over this rookie that just came in out of nowhere. And that just kind of like screwed me over in a way because like up to December, I was playing really well, averaging double digit points and stuff, coming off the bench at first, but starting sparingly. And I felt like at that point, like I was like, oh, I'm locking into that two guard spot like to start. We came back from the Christmas break and it was just like my ass was just sitting on the bench and I didn't know why. I didn't change my attitude. I didn't get into a tiff with the coaching staff or nothing. It was just, I went from playing like 27 minutes a game to 18 to 15. And I never understood why. It wasn't until the end of the season that my agent at the time, fired now, my agent at the time told me that politics trying to play the reason as to why I wasn't getting played. And I was like, dude, you couldn't do the same thing for me? Like, but I guess as a rookie, I didn't really have too much of a leg to stand on when it came to, making threats to the organization about pulling me out and placing me somewhere else. So things like that, that certainly happens. Politics certainly plays a part into, how basketball is played. But like I said, the best thing an agent can do is to place you in a situation where, he has trust in that organization. He's worked with that organization before. And I've been pretty blessed that the agent that I've had for the last 5 years now has done that for me.
Okay, so let's back up even more, talk about Creighton here, because you committed to Dana Altman, but then Greg, Coach Altman goes to Oregon, and now Greg McDermott, and all of a sudden, wing bang boom, he's going to be your head coach. Like, I know what that's like, whereas like I committed to play for Roy Williams. Roy goes to North Carolina, all of a sudden Bill Self's my head coach. And that can go one of two ways, man. That can go really bad, or can obviously in your case it ended up going really well. What was that like for you? Like, did you waver at all? Like, oh, do I really want to stay at Creighton? Do I really want to still be here? Or did you instantly know, like, okay, I like this Greg McDermott guy, this is going to work?
Man, as 17-year-old Jahenz was freaking out that entire week,
I
I can tell
bet.
you that much. But honestly, what kept me like head above water was D-Rock. Coach DeVries was just steady in his commitment to Creighton. Like, he just wanted to be here so bad. And he was the guy that flew up to recruit me in Canada. He was the guy that, you know, offered to fly me down to Omaha and show me around campus. I met Altman on my visit. Obviously, he's the head coach and all that stuff. That's just coach go out to recruit. You know, that's not out of the regular, you know, way that things go. But just knowing that D-Rock really, really wanted to stay, you know, kind of kept me calm. And then when Coach Mack took the job and D-Rock announced that he was going to stay as an assistant, it just, you know, it helped my heart rate go down just a little bit.
Gotcha.
And then just that first conversation with Coach Mack, just, man, that guy is so personable, especially on the phone. Like, he knows how to talk to people. He knows how to, you know, calm situations down. So, like, he was just basically telling me, like, look, I've heard about you. You've been on our radar. Obviously, he was at Iowa State at the time. He's like, you've been on our radar as well. I would love for you to stay here. You know, and we definitely still have a place for you here. That meant the world to me. And then obviously, like you said, things definitely worked out well for me in my 4 years here.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go into Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors. By Pella, won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. You were an energy guy, a dude that every time he walked into the locker room, the practice floor, like the vibe, the energy went up. I remember that I kind of felt like that was my role when I played. Like, I had to be the guy that brought it energy wise to every single weight room session, conditioning, like, it didn't matter. I had to bring the energy and kind of connect everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, how was that for you? Because, like, I think it came natural for me as it did for you. But listen, it's not easy some days. Some days you show up and you're like, man, you pick me up. You bring the energy, man. Like,
right. You
talk. Like, did you have days where you were like, I just don't got it, but I got to dig in a little bit? Or were you just the, what you see is what you get? It was every day Jahin's man of God was feeling 100% and happy and energized.
Hell no. Absolutely not, brother. Hell no. Some days suck, man. You're an 18-year-old kid. In my situation, I'm in a different country, right? I miss my family. I miss my friends back home. Like, those things are just natural. So some days you are down and all that stuff. But I don't know. I feel like I'm just an upbeat guy in general. So it takes a lot to just hold me down, I guess.
Yep.
So even though, like, I might be feeling down for a couple hours, man, all I need is, like, a breakfast sandwich and I'm cool. I'm good to go. But I do remember my freshman year, I had a conversation with Coach Mack about literally what we're talking about. It was just one of those days, right? Like, I just missed my mom, I missed my brothers, my sister, and I was just kind of down. Like, it just held me down for longer than it usually did. And we had practice, and I didn't have the best practice. I wasn't the loudest guy. The next day, Coach Mack, like, called me into his office, which was kind of routine. Like, anytime he, like, texted me or called me, I never felt like, oh, shit, like, I'm in trouble.
Right,
like,
right.
That was never, like, an issue for me.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I'm just going to swing by Coach Mack, let's see what he's got to say. And he, like, closed the door behind us after I walked in. I was like, oh, wait, this is different.
This is different.
And he sat me down, and he was just, like, fairly concerned. He was just like, hey, like, are you all right? Like, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, what's up? He's like, you weren't there yesterday, brother. Like, you were there, but you weren't there. You weren't you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I guess I missed home. Maybe I'm a little homesick. I don't know. And he looked at me in the eyes. I'll never forget this. And I kind of, like, decided to have that as, like, my battling cry a little bit. He looked at me dead in the eyes and he said, listen, for us, for this group, you're not allowed to have a bad day. You're not allowed to be the guy that mopes around and all that. He's like, we got enough of those guys. And the reason why, you know, we love you so much is the energy and you always picking everybody up. So if you have a bad day, that is reason for X and Y and Z to have a bad day as well. So like challenge yourself to just, if, even if you feel that way, challenge yourself to not present that like in front of your teammates, because they're just going to feed off your energy. And if your energy is down, their energy is going to be even lower. And I just kind of understood the message in that. And it's kept me going for like a really long time. Like even when I'm overseas, like the same kind of rules apply, right? I'm away from my friends, my family. I miss people. I get homesick. I'm in a different culture, in a different territory, unfamiliar territory. But I'm just not allowed to have a bad day, I guess. I just have to show up and practice and do my job and be upbeat, be ready to go, and do whatever it takes to not only get through that practice, but to get through that day and to get through that week and to get through that month and to get through that season. So that's just kind of the way that I look at it, and I just try to allow myself not to have a bad day.
That's a cool story with Coach Mack there. That's a, you know, because it's a valuable role for any team. And the key is when it's appreciated. You know what I mean? Like when people recognize it, like it's one thing when you come in and you bring it every day authentically and everybody's just kind of no one values it. Then it gets hard to continue to bring it every day. But if you're in an environment that appreciates that, it makes a huge difference. And I'm telling you, it matters. I'm telling you, even at like it, say you work at a bank, you sell insurance, like we all, it's all the same. Like you want people that show up to work that are enthusiastic and happy to be there and like, so it's even just like it's a life lesson too, a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the guys that I actually like really learned that from low key is Taylor Stormberg. He was that way too. Obviously, we played different roles on the team, him being a walk-on, kind of the leader of, scout team and everything, and then me trying to be the leader of the team. But Taylor Stormberg was a guy that every single day, like, it didn't matter what was going on in his life, he was ready to go. And I learned a lot from him, honestly, like, especially in my freshman year, because I'm like, what is this guy on? And that's coming from me. I'm like, whatever he's having, I need to have too. You just kind of learn that role from guys like that. And then, like I said, like, I just allowed that to become like my calling card. And then now, because I've done it so often, it literally
It's
is
natural,
natural to
right?
me. No
But it's
matter what the
also,
situation is, like that's who I'm gonna present myself as soon as we touch the practice court.
but that's so because it's natural for Taylor. Like you run into Taylor, like right now, if you ran into Taylor at Starbucks, he'd be crunk. You know what I mean? Like that's
Oh,
just that,
100%.
and that's how. So it has to be authentic too, because you also get those dudes that show up at practice and they try to like. It's never good when it's not coming from a place of authenticity. You know what I mean? Like if it's not you, that's not you. Where it is, it's real with you. It's real with Taylor. Like those guys, you guys are just happy, energetic dudes. And so that also, that's when it's like the perfect combination is when it's authentic as well. But
Yeah, of course. Also, people will be able to sniff it out when it's not authentic too. So like teammates will start looking at you sideways and be like, man, this is just doing too much right now.
yeah,
But
calm down,
I think
man.
from the very start, people understood like who I was. And then it's like, it kind of extends off the practice court too. It's like when I see him on campus, just like you said, if you saw Taylor at the bank, like he,
He's
at a
pumped.
library, like they'd kick him out because like he'd be jumping on the tables and stuff. So yeah, it's just like it extends beyond the practice court and it extends beyond basketball. And it is who I am, and I really enjoy being who I am. So it's not going to stop anytime soon. I can
It better
promise you
not.
that.
It better not. When give me I want to talk about Doug for a little bit, because you were his roommate and obviously you guys were, side by side for 4 straight years. When did you know it with Doug? Like, when did it go from this guy's pretty good to like, okay, hold on. This guy's like the best player in the country and is like going to play in the NBA. Like, was there a game, a moment, a pickup game? Was it an actual game? Like, when did it click for you? Like, holy shit, this guy's like, this is another level.
Honestly, like if you want me to be totally honest, incoming freshman year summer league. Honestly, like that's when I first saw like the first glimpse, like dude doesn't miss inside of 15 feet and he can shoot the three. Like, and coming from Canada, like I hadn't seen too many guys at 6'8", whatever you want to list Doug at the time, that was able to do that. So I'm like, yo, dude is fucking good. You know what I mean? And then 2-a-days where like just bigger bodies were just winging up against him, and that every single day, like he just came back and was kicking ass. I was like, homie can go. Yeah. I remember having a conversation with my brother. I was just like, yo, my roommate, though, like, low key, I think they're going to try to redshirt him, but he could go. Right. Like, he could really play. And then, obviously, we understand what Doug's story became to be. But I saw some glimpses early on. But, like, honestly, there was a couple of times early freshman year. I'm talking about, like, first, second week of school. Doug would just wake up at, like, 6:30 in the morning. I'd still be asleep. I could just hear him kind of, like, shuffling about. And he would just, like, leave the room. I would, like, catch up with him for lunch later. I'd be like, dude, why were you up so early? Like, I just want to get some shots up. I just want to get some shots. Like, he would say that, like, a few times. And finally, like, I just kind of caught on. It's like, dude, next time you go, wake me up. Like, give me just a 5 minutes heads up. Like, I'll go with you.
Right.
And then we started going in together a little bit, and I just kind of understood, like, oh, I that's what it you have to work to get there. Oh, I get it, you know? But it's just his talent was just undeniable. Like, he was going to be the best player on our team no matter what. If they had redshirted him, he would have been the best player the next year, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
Or he would have just kicked our ass while being on scout team the whole time. So I'm just happy that they decided to allow him to play.
Man.
And that he was wearing the same jersey that I was during all those practices that I never had to deal with that issue.
Yeah, because there were two moments for me. One was it was a summer and D-Rock texted me and you guys were short bodies and you needed someone to come play pickup and we could only play three on three. And Doug was one of the guys.
Yeah.
And like you said, they were thinking about redshirting him. So I play three on three against Doug and I'm like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
This is, you know what I mean? Because it's just different. Like these little flip ups off the window and like all this stuff.
Right.
And like, I remember going straight down to D-Rock's office and I'm like, D-Rock, you're going to redshirt Doug? He was like, yeah, it's possible. And I was like, he's like the best player on the team. He was like, seriously? I'm like, yes. Like, this dude is good. And then for me, the game, do you remember the Bradley game where he had 44 at Bradley and I think he missed like three shots? That was the first game that I was like, okay, this dude, this is different. I knew after that game, the Bradley game, 44 points in Peoria, I was like, okay, this is different. That was the. Do you remember that game? Did you got like? Do you remember being like, "Uh-oh, this guy's different here"?
Right. So I'm his roommate, right? So I saw it a little bit earlier, but specifically about that game, that was the first time I caught myself just standing and watching, and recognizing greatness for what it was. Right. If you go back on that tape, I would literally like the outlet would come to Antoine and then he would push the ball up. We get into like our secondary break. I would literally run to the corner. And as soon as Doug touched the ball, I was just that was it. That was my possession right there. Cause I just wanted to just look.
Right.
And I remember, I don't remember the name of the guy who was defending me, but I just kept remembering. I remember saying, hey, you're not going to go double. Hey, leave me. Go do something because your homie's getting cooked over there.
Right.
And he was kind of going back and forth with me. He's like, man, you know I can't leave you. And I was just like, all right. I guess that's the choice that as a coaching staff, you got that's the choice that you guys made. Pick your poison. That's the poison that you choose to die with, I guess. And Doug was just killing, man. Oh my God. It was like post us, pick and pop three, spin moves on the block.
Everything. Dirk,
I think that was the first time he hit him with the first Dirk fadeaway. Yes. I was like, man, kid is having himself a game. And, you know, he never looked back after that. But, yeah, I vividly remember that game. Be like, okay, we got a defensive rebound. Just run to the corner and look. And you have a first-class seat to a beautiful show. Oh, so
it was, man, nuts,
that, was man. That was such a wonderful game. And that memory for me was awesome.
Yeah,
awesome
crazy.
Memory to be a part of.
What was the – okay, everybody's talked about the you know, the Greg and Doug father-son dynamic from their perspective. Mm-hmm. What was it like from your perspective? Like, if me just swooping in to be around the team a little bit on road trips, all that stuff, like, I never – like, you wouldn't – other than the fact they kind of look alike, like, you wouldn't have known – the way they interacted, that they were father and son. Like, what was it like for you being a teammate? Did you guys ever, like, did you ever see anything that was like, man, he's giving him preferential treatment or anything like that? Because I've never heard anybody say anything like that.
No, definitely not. And I've been asked this question, like, so often throughout the years. Like, yo, was there nepotism there? Like,
right.
Were all the players called for? No, Doug was that good, and Coach Mack did the best thing for the team was to call friggin' Dakota for Doug as often as he possibly could. You know what I mean? Right. So, like, in my from my perspective, no, I didn't. I know that Doug early on had a little bit of trouble with it.
Sure.
To the point where, like, psychologically for himself, to allow himself to get over that hump, he changed Coach Mack's name on his phone from Dad to Coach Greg McDermott.
Right.
I think for him, that just... that sealed the deal. Like, okay, like I have to approach it in such a manner for us to be successful. So that's a cool little insight that I'm not sure too many people know about. But I do remember the time where like it was official for all of us. I would say, like, I will speak for myself. I'm not going to say for everybody, but when I really, really noticed it was a time where Coach Mack just got into us, just slid us up after a practice. So we all come down and, you know, Doug's always like one of the last guys to leave because he's always up there shooting. So we're all in the locker room like, man, this is some bullshit. Like these coaches are going crazy on us. What the, you know what I mean? Like
right,
the typical
right,
locker room after a tough practice. And then Doug walks in and like the room kind of goes silent a little bit. And Doug goes, man, dudes upstairs are tripping today. I don't know what they be on. And then we're like, yeah! He's one of us. So, after that happened, I think we're all like, and that was like super early on.
Sure.
Too. Like, especially like Coach Mack came in and his job was to rebuild Creighton to what it was supposed to be, right? I think at that point we had missed the tournament for like 6 years in a row. And that just doesn't sit well with the Creighton fan base.
No.
Like, we're used to winning, we're used to being on the big stage. So, Coach Mack came in with Coach Lutz and D-Rock and Coach Merfeld. And, you know, they just were just trying to lay down the law. Look, all that stuff of playing soft and being called soft, that's no longer going to apply to us. We're going to be a tough team that's going to defend, and we're going to run our offense, and we're going to execute. And when push comes to shove, we're not going to fold. Like, that was their mentality when they came in. They were just trying to build their culture. So that first year, like, we took the brunt of a lot of that stuff because, again, like, they were just trying to make sure that we knew from the very beginning, you know, what was going to fly and what was not.
Right.
And like I said, like, that story of Doug, like, just being one of us certainly sticks
great.
Out in my mind as a moment when I realized, oh, this is not no father-son
right,
dynamic
right, right.
When we're in those four lines on the court. This is really player and coach, and they're both trying their best to make the team better.
Yeah, that's a good little anecdote there. I've talked to Doug about this and Coach McDermott about this, but to me, with that group, you know, you, Doug, Ethan, Gibbs, you know, that the core group, there were two turning points to me. One I guess didn't have Gibbs involved, but it was, I thought the CBI run your freshman year was really important. Like, you guys found your style and you guys needed to learn how to win close games. You were able to do that. And then I thought the road win at San Diego State your sophomore
Hell
year
yeah.
was a huge – I vividly remember walking out of the arena and being like, there's something special with this group. Like, and you could just feel it change. Did those – did you feel the same way?
I would say those two moments, legit. You've done your research, man. God damn. Okay,
yeah.
Those two moments are
Come
strong,
on,
bro. I don't even know what else I could add. Maybe aside from the fact that, like, we kind of caught lightning in a bottle, in a sense, with the CBI run, because pretty much all year we were playing a certain way, and then the coaching staff just opened up the offense. They just decided, look, like, let's use these as, like, practice games, essentially, like, preparing for next year, and they just opened up the offense in a totally different way that really became what we were all about for the next 3 years. So I think we were averaging like maybe like 70-ish points a game. And then in the CBI run, we were up to like almost 90-ish
yes.
points a game. And not even that like we did anything too vastly different. We just decided to play at a much quicker pace. We wouldn't walk the ball up the floor after made baskets anymore. We decided to just take the ball out as quickly as possible and just run it up. And then obviously with the addition of Grant Gibbs as such a great passer and such a smart guy that he was, it just took that philosophy to a whole nother level. It allowed Antoine Young to get off the ball a little bit more, so he became much more of a scorer his senior year. And I think also, like, kudos to Antoine. He became a much better leader that senior year too. So he was able to place us all in better positions to score, and he just gained the trust of the coaching staff to be able to do that as well. So, but yeah, that San Diego State game, man. Woo,
man.
Being down 17 in the first half, having to climb our way back, Ethan Rogge going crazy.
Nuts.
That was maybe one of my first introductions to what Rogge bombs are all about,
yeah.
you know, because he had to sit out that second half of that first year with that plantar fasciitis that bothered him so much. Yeah, it was just, man, what a game, you know? Like, honestly, what a game. And for it to end on an Ethan layup of all baskets.
Incredible, right? You know, I mean, it just had
a whole basket. Of all it was them. Me driving, dishing it to Ethan for a layup. Of all the ways that it could end, man, that's incredible.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say, I think either Twan might have gotten foul trouble in the first. Austin came in. It was Austin's first big moment, too. Like, I think Chapman came in and played really well, and you were like, okay, this kid can come in and change the feel of the game and all that. Like, it was just a. All around is incredible, man. It was just a seminal moment for your group. Did you feel like the move to the Big East, did the jump feel significant for you guys from the Valley? Like, in the moment, was it like, whoa, this is different. This is up another level. How did it feel for you for that 1 year?
It was so exciting. Anything that's new is always going to be exciting, right? So it's like, oh, we're not taking a road trip to Peoria. We're taking a road trip to Washington, D.C.
Right.
Oh, we're not going to Indiana State. We're going to Villanova.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's just all of that was just different. And the reason why we were so successful that year is because, like you said, we had 3 years of playing together already. So we were just a well-oiled machine. I don't think that iteration of the Big East was ready for what we were presenting at that time.
Agreed.
I think we caught a lot of teams by surprise. And that was a little shock, too, because we went 16-0 at home that year. And I think that was the first time in a really long time that a Crane team did that. Because we would a Valley team would come to CenturyLink CenturyLink at the time, Shy Hill Center now.
Yeah.
And give us a run for our money. And you'd have like a Colt Ryan that would go for 46 and we would barely win that game. Or you have a Missouri State team with a Kyle Weems.
Right.
Just very big and experienced. And would just, you know, use that experience against us and beat us at home. But we went 16-0 senior year. And I was just like, this is different. Like, this, it feels awesome, but it's certainly different. So I just think we were just ready for that challenge because we were just so trusting of one another. By that point. But yeah, it was certainly different, especially like when we were on the road, just to be at a bigger arenas, being on national TV pretty much every single game. That certainly felt good, and it was different from what we had experienced being in the Valley.
So I was thinking about, obviously, on July 1st.
But I'm a Valley boy, though. Don't get it.
Hey, I know, man. I know.
I play Valley, though. High key.
I like the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. I miss going to St. Louis. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love Madison Square Garden in New York, and the Big East tournament is, like, arguably the GOAT of conference tournaments. But, it's hard, you know? It's like I'm a Valley guy in my heart at times, man. It's tough too. There are times I miss playing Northern Iowa, and I miss the Valley tournament. But nevertheless, right. like you said, playing in the Garden and playing Villanova and playing, you know, Georgetown, that's not bad either. That's right. Pretty good. That's pretty good.
And now I got that cheer for D-Rock, who's doing his thing there at Drake, man. He's killing. So I catch myself watching more Valley games than I probably should at this stage of my career and in my life, but still, it's good to see how good D-Rock is doing. And like, he was the guy that came up to see me in Canada. He's the one that brought me out of Canada and brought me to the States to play Division I basketball. Man, I'm always going to be a fan of that.
Nothing
guy
makes me feel older than Tucker watching like highlights of Tucker.
About that to somebody the other day. Like, when we lost to Baylor my senior year, it was like Drew Berfeld and Tucker DeVries and like, JC and Jordan Vandaloo, we were all in the lobby in the hotel and we were all crying together because we understood it was going to be the last time.
Right.
they're going to see me play. And now they're all making college decisions in college or about to be in college. Like, it's insane how quickly time has flown. And yeah, I definitely feel old just watching all of that develop right beneath our eyes.
Yeah, it's nuts. For people to know, Tucker DeVries is Coach DeVries' son, and he is like a baller. Like, dude is a great player. He's going to play for his dad at Drake. And yeah, this, I'm sure everybody has that person in their life that for whatever reason they're always kind of like 5 years old to you. Like, that's Tucker for me. Right. Like Tucker, yeah. Like, just whenever I see Tucker now, I'm like, my God, this is, time needs to slow down, you know? It's crazy to me.
Hey, you want to know low-key who that is for me? Avery Dingman.
That makes no sense, but I love it.
Man, I don't know why, but every time I see Avery, even to this day, he always says the same thing to me, and I always say the same thing to him. It's like, I'm still a sophomore, and he's still a freshman. Like, we always look at each other that way, and I don't think it's ever going to – we're going to be 60, and we're going to be talking like that to each other. I promise you. But, like, every time I run into him, every time I see him, man, it's always all love. And he's like, Jay, like, I don't get it. Like, I feel like you're still a sophomore right now, and I'm just still a freshman. And that's just always how it's going to be.
So funny. One of my favorite Avery Dingman lines that he gave me one time that he was let. We were, for some whatever reason, I was sitting next to him on the road eating, and we were talking about like sleeping and not being able to sleep at night. And he was like, you know what I need is I need to just pull up some Evansville sideline out of bounds plays and I will fall asleep immediately and I was dying. He's like, I need to pull up some Evansville slobs, and I will fall asleep in some minutes.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why that's my first Avery Dingman.
Avery Dingman is such a character. I love it. I'm not shocked at all by him saying that.
Oh, I was, like, crying. I was crying with him somewhere. It was good. This episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Runza. Runza and my pod have teamed up for a sweet summer sweepstakes that can win you some great prizes, including an amazing grand prize. Head over to herdappmedia.com/BAWSweeps. That's herdappmedia.com/BAWSweeps and enter for your chance for the grand prize of, wait for it, one Runza combo meal a month for an entire year, plus a Nick Bob Podcast t-shirt. That's right. One Runza combo meal a month for an entire year. Absolutely incredible. Plus, there are other great prizes as well. So head over to herdappmedia.com/BAWSweeps. Get registered, and you might get your free Runza game right once per month for an entire year. Again, that's herdappmedia.com/BAWSweeps to enter. Runza and the Nick Bob Podcast, a winning combination trying to make you a winner. Runza makes it all better. So, because I was thinking about this with York, because your team was so star-studded and so, you know, popular and famous in Omaha, that I was thinking about your team with the name, image, and likeness stuff that's happened. So, you know, on July 1st now, NIL, where players can make money off themselves, that era is officially here. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction to it? Because obviously I'm super happy for the players. I certainly wish that I could have had it. I sure you wish you guys could have had it. But I'm curious just what your initial thoughts are, being someone that's gone through college, not being able to have it. Now you're looking back. It's implemented now. What do you think of it?
Man, when I first saw that, you know, I guess being signed into law is how it happened. But basically, when I just saw that players had an opportunity now to make money off their likeness, a couple of thoughts ran through my head. First of all, Doug would have been a kajillionaire.
Yeah.
Because I remember freshman year, when Teach Me How to Dougie came out, there was a shirt that was being passed around, and the E's were replaced with threes, and it said Teach Me How to Dougie on it, and everyone in the student section had it. I was like, Doug could have raked up. And then you gave me a nickname, so I feel like I certainly could have monetized that.
You could have.
One way, shape, or form. Red Bull was going to call me and give me a cease and desist letter at some point. But by that point, I would have already made what I needed to make, probably.
Right.
But honestly, in all seriousness, I'm very happy that the players are able to do that. It's long overdue. For a lot of these guys, that's the height of their popularity. Not everybody plays pro. Not everybody plays pro overseas even. A lot of guys, they have these 4 years and that's it. They're never going to be more popular than where they're at right now. And the fact that, like, you know, the NCAA makes money, the universities make money, the coaches make money, everybody's making money but the players, that just never sat right with me. So I'm glad that they were able to rectify that situation. And I hope that the guys who are in this current situation right now don't take it for granted. Look, you come on campus, you have maybe one, maybe two, maybe three, maybe 4 years, who knows, you know, how good of a player you'll become. But you have a chance that a lot of people wish they had. You know, I wish I had an opportunity my freshman year to make, I don't know, maybe $100,000 for that year. You know, that would have been a lot better than the $80 my sister used to send me every once in a while, which honestly could have been $80,000 at that point. Sure. That's how much I needed money when I was a freshman, you know. So take advantage of it. And if you can monetize, you know, your likeness, do so, and do so in an intelligent way, and you know, find a financial advisor that's going to help you save the money that you made. Don't go blow it all on Jordans and stuff like that. Just do what you have to do, because you know you're now in a position where you can not only help yourself out, but help your family out as well. And I know a lot of these college students come from kind of the same background that I came from. You know, my father passed away my senior year of high school. My mom was basically by herself raising four kids. We're all in college at the time. I'm blessed that I got a scholarship and I was able to, you know, take some financial burden away from her. But could you imagine if I was in a position where I could make some more money and send back home during that time?
Right.
You know, kids who have maybe not the exact same story, but similar stories, who come from impoverished backgrounds, can now say that. And you need to really take that seriously. So I hope that the guys who are able to do that, you know, kind of take an intelligent approach with all of this and are able to really help themselves out and help their families out as well.
Totally agree. So since we last talked, you know, we talked a little bit about, hey, what's Creighton going to look like next year? Because obviously they lost, you know, pretty much their entire core group. There's been a lot of roster additions since we last talked, to the platoon of now. Creighton has a top five recruiting class in the country, which is just amazing to say out loud, you know. I mean, what or maybe who are you most excited to see or watch next year? Is it your fellow Canadian? Is it Nembhard? Like, what do you think?
Two guys, it's both Ryans. It's got to be Colic Brenner. It's got to be Nembhard for sure. Nembhard, obviously near and dear to my heart. Canadian, only second Canadian to ever play on the program, me being the first. So I'm very excited to see how well he's going to do. Obviously, I have a keen interest in seeing a Canadian perform well with a Blue Jay uniform on. And obviously, Colic Brenner. The last time that you and I talked, I told you that I feel like the best thing that happened to him was him pretty much getting his ass kicked with those Gonzaga bigs who ran roughshod on him during the tournament. I think he's come back a better player. From what I've seen him, a little bit I've seen him earlier in the summer, he's bigger, he's stronger, he looks like he's in better shape. He just won gold with Team USA in Latvia, so that's another feather in the cap for him. And I think he's going to come back with a whole ton of confidence. And he kind of steps into that leadership role. You know, you look at who the elder statements are on that team, the guys who are playing, it was Alex O'Connell being a senior. It's Sharif, not only being a hometown guy, but being a junior. Wow, how quickly does time fly? Sharif is already a junior. And then now Colic Brenner, who had a ton of minutes at that center spot, who's going to get a lot more minutes now, you know, that Christian Bishop chose to transfer. So it's going to be a very interesting team to watch. And then, man, no one should sleep on Arthur. Man, that kid is going to be really, 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 really good. I just can't wait to see how Coach Mack puts the group together this upcoming year.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, I'm super excited. I cannot wait to get a look at these dudes and watch Coach McDermott kind of put them all in the right position to flourish. We'll get you out of here on this. I got a kind of handful of quick hitter things to kind of throw at you. Canadian culture versus American culture. Like, what's the biggest difference? And how big of a challenge was it when you came to Omaha?
Not too much of a difference. I'm really trying to think right now. I guess it would be more like nuanced things. So like maybe the way that I spoke kind of let people the wrong way a little bit.
Yeah.
If I got the American accent that I was supposed to get. I used to say A a lot. I kind of cut that out of my vernacular a little bit. So not too many differences. And also, like, you're kind of being a Korean men's basketball player. People are just naturally, you know, nice to you, I guess. I guess that's one of the perks of being on the team. So they give you the benefit of the doubt early on. So I was able to just kind of, you know, people were treated friendly. It actually reminded me a lot of Canada.
Right.
That's how people naturally are over there. And that's how people, I feel, are naturally here. So not too much of a difference. But I feel like we just talked about Ryan Nembhard. He's going to be able to adjust really quickly. And also, he was in Florida for high school. He'll be
fine.
Makes
a difference. He'll be totally fine. If/when you win this tournament and you get your cut of the $1 million, What's the first thing you're going to go buy? What's Shaheen's Manigat going to go buy when he wins this million?
The bulk of it is going to be put in a bank for sure. Savings account. Yeah, for sure.
Look at you. What you're boring. You are boring.
Fiscally responsible Dennis. Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it? I don't know, man. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I'll take my mom and my grandma out to dinner when I get back to Canada I head back overseas.
Who was funniest teammate in your time at Creighton? Who was it?
Oh, you can't put me on the spot like that.
You had a lot of funny dudes. You had a lot of funny dudes.
Yo, you know what? I'm going to go to my OG, Daryl Ashford, on the lows. The funniest guy, man. Honestly, like, and it's so low-key, his sense of humor. Like, right. You literally have to be right next to him to hear the nonsense that he whispers. But if you catch what he's saying, man, you're going to be rolling all day. Damn. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to Daryl. And nobody be mad at me, too. Hey, I don't want anybody raping me over the leaves over this question.
I know
people are going to hit my DMs like, yo, you couldn't mention me? Come on, man. It's fine. You guys were all funny. God damn.
Everybody was funny. But Daryl had a very subtle, low-key, laid-back humor to him that was different.
Yeah.
It was very different from everybody. It was great. favorite game? Favorite game at Creighton?
Has to be on the road at Villanova for sure. Oh, God. See, that's blasphemous to say because Wichita State, last game of the Valley, going out as a winner.
People forget about that one. People sleep on that.
I'll let your fans pick one of those two. How about that?
There you go. Could you play two guard for Grant Gibbs as your coach? How would that go?
I would get chewed out. It would be kind of a little bit like the Josh Jones situation. Anytime you tell me not to shoot, I look at him sideways. But also, I would trust that if I chose to play for Grant, that he would put me in the right position.
He would.
So
you know
I think it would be fine.
You know he would. By the way, are you surprised at all? Like, we all knew Grant. I mean, like, I'm not too surprised to see Gibbs, you know, rising up the coaching ranks. Are you surprised at all?
No. No.
Right?
Not even a bit. Not even a single bit.
Favorite Creighton player to come after you? So after you graduated, is there a guy that you've watched here like, love that guy. I wish I could have played with that guy. Is there one dude that stands out?
There's two, Kyrie Thomas, Damian Jefferson, because I felt like both those guys kind of embodied the way that I played, but they did it at such a higher level. Like those guys were buckets and they could defend their asses off. So, those two guys stand out to me for sure. And then obviously, like, I don't know, I love watching Marcus Foster. Like the best, in my opinion, the best ever Creighton player at making really, really tough shots, like shots that you shouldn't be taking that he was making.
Right.
So, yeah, I loved watching him play too.
Yeah, okay, and then I have to imagine, I know the answer. Is Drake the GOAT rapper? I mean, being like, is he your fave?
Next question.
Is that obvious? There's not even a debate.
Next question.
Is Drake the Jay-Z, number? Like, is he? Does Jay-Z, he run Canada?
Jay-Z for me because of my childhood. I have to say Jay-Z. But man, what Drake has done, I don't know if we're ever gonna see anything like that. Like he literally switched the game up with everything that he's able to do. Like you never know. You hear a song title from Drake. And you're like, there's no way, man. There's no way he's got a song called Passion Fruit. And then you listen to it, and then you're like, Passion Fruit is the best song on this album. So he's just, his range is just crazy. So
I think he said it best.
It's hard to not say he's at the top.
Well, you said it best. Whatever the bar, I can't remember how the bar started, but it's like, that's why every song sounds like Drake featuring Drake. Like, he's one of the only dudes that can, like, because he can sing, he can rap, like he can do a whole song, and it touches on all the notes, you know? Do you?
He also said, if all I hear is me, then who should I be afraid of? I'm like, woo, boy, spin.
Oh, man. I do remember, I can't remember who's, me and you were at a wedding, and we were at a bar, and I walked up next to you, and I knew that if I dropped this line on you, it's not a Drake line, but you would enjoy it. I dropped up to you and I just looked at you and I said, futuristic handgun. If you act foul, you get two shots.
You get two shots and one. Was it Caleb's wedding? It might have been.
It might have been. It might have been. I was like, that bar was in my head. That Lil Wayne bar was in my head. And I was like, I got to go give it to somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I know Jahins will know it. So I had to go give that one to you, you know?
Hey, if I remember correctly, you and I were ripping the dance floor, if I remember correctly.
Man, you and I had never really, you know, we've collaborated on the basketball floor, but we've never collaborated on the dance floor. And we were quite the collaboration, you know?
Yeah, we were.
Well, we can leave it at that before we get into too many more ridiculous stories. I can't go out with you guys anymore, man. You guys are on another level. Are you guys old now? Are you guys can't let it rip like you used to be able to let it rip?
You want to feel old? I just turned 30, brother. How about that?
Damn. I know. Like, you guys, I can't have you guys get in your 30s, man.
Yeah. I mean, we're all here. Doug, as soon as January 3rd hits, it's right. All of us. The whole group is going to be 30, so you better be ready for it.
Okay. All right. We'll go. Yeah. We'll go get, like, the early bird special and day drink.
Call it a night at 9:30.
That's what we'll do. We'll
Grand's been doing that for half a decade now. So we're good.
That's true. Jahins Managa. Hey, man, best of luck in the tournament. I'll be watching. I'll be cheering for you. This was great. Really appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir, Nick. Bob, appreciate you, brother.
All right, my thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet, great burgers, cheese Runza, delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
A Huda Media Production.